After 9 long years in cryo prison, Tychus Findlay was released, but his freedom came at a cost. To be sealed within his old Confederate CMC armor as his new prison, until he successfully assassinates Sarah Kerrigan, and should he fail, the armor would shut down his major organs. I just want to take a moment to let you know that you can now find 2 Lord of Sleep 2 podcasts on Spotify. One specifically for 40,000, and the other for all other lore. If you want to support the channel further and unlock some goodies for yourself, you can head over to my Patreon, where you can unlock exclusive Lord of Sleep 2 audios. Or you can head to my Ko-fi, where you can commission your own custom sleep video. And finally, you can even find some super cool 40K inspired sleep merch on my website. Links for all of these are down in the description. Sleep well, and let's get back to your regularly scheduled sleep content. Meanwhile, across the dusty world of Mar-Sara, the Terran Dominion was tightening its grip. Local colonies fell one by one beneath its banners, and among those resisting the occupation was rebel leader Jim Raynor, commander of the small but defiant force known as Raynor's Raiders. After the latest skirmish, Raynor returned to Joey Ray's bar, a familiar haunt from a simpler time. There, waiting for him, was his old friend, Tychus Findlay, freshly freed, swaggering, and already scheming. Over shared drinks and old memories, Findlay made a proposal. The Dominion had been seizing alien relics and outlawing their trade, excavating Zelnaga artifacts across fringe worlds like Mar-Sara. Findlay had a buyer, the Mobius Foundation, once a legitimate scientific institution, now a shadowy client willing to pay handsomely. Raynor agreed, and together the Raiders and Findlay's forces struck at a Dominion excavation site and made off with the first artifact. But their victory was short-lived, for shortly after, the Zerg came, and they struck without warning, overwhelming the surface of Mar-Sara. The Raiders defended a settlement long enough for their battlecruiser, the Hyperion, to evacuate them from orbit. It soon became clear that Mar-Sara was not alone. The Zerg were attacking Dominion worlds all across the sector. In the aftermath, Raynor was faced with a choice: rescue colonists from the farming world of Agria, or pursue another artifact buried deep within Protoss territory on Monolith. On Monolith, the Raiders found themselves caught between two enemies: Kerrigan's Zerg Swarm and the Tal Darim, a fanatical Protoss splinter sect. The Raiders struck fast, seizing the artifact and escaping just before Kerrigan herself arrived, though not before she could taunt Raynor. Back aboard the Hyperion, Findlay accessed the ship's archives to study the Queen of Blades, much to the irritation of Matt Horner, who hadn't authorized the intrusion. To Tychus, Kerrigan was a target to be eliminated, and to Horner, she was still a wound that haunted Raynor. The next artifact lay on the dead world of Zeal, where a Mobius expedition had vanished. On descent, the Raiders found the culprits, again the Tal Darim, using a massive Draken laser drill as both tool and weapon. The Raiders carved through Protoss defenses and recovered the artifacts where Mobius had failed. After Zeal, Raynor received an unexpected visitor, Zeratul the Dark Templar. The Protoss did not come to fight. Instead, he delivered a warning. For all her sins, Kerrigan was the only one who could save them all from what was coming. He left Raynor an Ian crystal, containing his memories, visions that would reveal the truth behind the prophecy of the Xel'Naga. When Raynor gazed into the crystal, he saw Zeratul's journey unfold. The Narazim had traveled to Ulan, seeking the prophecy of the Xel'Naga's return. Kerrigan, too, was there. The two clashed fiercely. Yet Zeratul sensed her heart was no longer in the fight. She, too, had glimpsed a future neither could stop. Zeratul escaped with fragments of the prophecy and sought to decipher them on Zakul. As Raynor continued to watch, his crew grew concerned. He was becoming lost in the visions. On Zakul, Zeratul discovered that the world's Protoss were enslaved by a hybrid creature, part Zerg, part Protoss. He fought and destroyed it, freeing the preservers, ancient seers who interpreted the prophecy. Their message spoke of a fallen one, and that what began with the Great Hungerer would end in darkness. Realizing the Great Hungerer must be the Overmind, Zeratul journeyed to Ire. Ire was a ruin. Among the carcass of the Overmind, Zeratul touched its thoughts and felt something unexpected. Fear and joy. Within its cortex, he met the spirit of Tassadar, who revealed the truth. The Overmind had not been born evil. It had been corrupted by an outside force, the Dark Voice, who bent it to his will. Without free will of its own, the Overmind could not resist its purpose, but it could act in secret. It could create a being who would be free. That being was Sarah Kerrigan. The Overmind had seen what would come, and through Tassadar, Zeratul saw it too. Raynor's final vision was the end. The galaxy in flames, humanity consumed, the Protoss making their last stand on a shadowed world. The swarm enslaved to the hybrids and their unseen master. The Dark Voice mocked them all, revealing that Kerrigan, the one who might have saved them, had been slain. The Protoss fell, and darkness swallowed the stars. But the message was clear. The Queen of Blades, once humanity's greatest threat, was the only hope to save it. Meanwhile, in the galaxy, Kerrigan had made her next move, launching a full-scale assault on Tirador 8, the Mobius Foundation's headquarters. Their scientists managed to flee, but their data cores, containing the coordinates of remaining artifacts, were left behind. At the request of Dr. Emil Narud, the raiders destroyed the data before Kerrigan could reach it. The mission was a success, but the close encounter left Raynor shaken and adrift. The next artifact was located on Typhon 11, and as the planet's star collapsed into a supernova, the raiders fought through Tal Darim forces and escaped with the relic moments before the world was consumed. Expecting to rendezvous with Mobius afterward, the raiders instead encountered a Dominion fleet, led by the flagship Bucephalus. Boarding the ship to confront Arcturus Minx himself, Rainer instead found Valerian Minsk, the Emperor's son. Valerian proposed an alliance to save Sarah Kerrigan from her infestation. Against his instincts, Rainer agreed. Their final objective lay aboard a Zelnaga world ship held by the Tal Darim. Its executor arrived personally, but even his mighty mothership could not prevent the raiders from claiming the last piece of the artifact. Rainer's raiders, now allied with the Valerian Minks, set course for Char. Many aboard the Hyperion distrusted the mission, and Rainer himself. Among them was Milo Kokinski, and even Tychus Findlay, who drunkenly called his old friend a coward. When Rainer overheard and confronted him, the two fought in their armor until Rainer bested him. Standing over his old friend, Rainer reminded the crew that the Zerg were the greater evil, and saving Kerrigan meant saving humanity. And so they prepared for war. On the surface of Char, the Terran landing was a disaster. Dropships burned in the atmosphere. Strike teams vanished. Only a handful survived to establish a foothold, where Rainer led a rescue of General Horace Warfield and his stranded men. To reach the primary hive, the raiders needed to cripple the Zerg support. Either the Nidus network that spawned their endless reinforcements, or their fast aerial broods that dominated the skies. Once those threats were neutralized, the path to the hive opened. General Warfield, now bearing a cybernetic arm, delivered the assembled Zelnaga artifact to Rainer. After a rousing speech, Rainer rallied the Terrans for one last stand. As waves of Zerg crashed against their lines, the artifact began to change. When it reached full power, it unleashed a cataclysmic energy nova. The Zerg horde disintegrated, and at its center, Sarah Kerrigan was reborn, partly de-infested, but alive. Rainer and Findlay led a team into the hive to recover her, but there, Tychus made his move. He revealed the truth of his release. Minsk had sent him to kill Kerrigan in exchange for his freedom. Rainer stood between them. Tychus hesitated, but then he drew. One shot echoed through the hive, and when the smoke cleared, Tychus Findlay lay dead. Rainer carried Kerrigan's unconscious form out into the dawn of Char, a broken sunrise over a scarred world. Valerian Minsk's gamble had succeeded. The Battle of Char had ended in a hard-won Terran victory. Sarah Kerrigan, de-infested at last, and the Zelnaga artifact that had purged her were ferried aboard the Dominion flagship Bucephalus. Nearby, Emperor Arcturus Minx waited aboard his own battlecruiser, the White Star, with the remainder of the Dominion Armada. The moment the dust settled, he demanded custody of Kerrigan, not for study, but for execution. His son, Prince Valerian Minx, refused. He had seen the prophecy, the warnings of the Dark Voice, and knew Kerrigan's survival might determine the fate of the Sector. The Emperor's patience snapped. He prepared to seize her by force, even if it meant killing his own son. Amidst the chaos, the remnants of the invasion fleet took heavy damage, but managed to break away. Raynor's raiders, aboard the Hyperion, drew swarms of Zerg toward the White Star, forcing the Dominion to disengage and giving the rebels their escape. Valyrian's plan was simple. Bring Kerrigan, though still weak and fevered from de-infestation, to Dr. Emil Narud, an expert in Zerg physiology and the head of the Mobius Foundation. But the Dominion wasn't done. Hidden tracking beacons aboard the Bucephalus revealed their position within minutes of leaving orbit. The Dominion intercepted them, sparking a running battle through the void. The raiders escaped, but lost ships in the process. To cut the trackers for good, Rory Swan, Earl, and Annabelle Thatcher boarded the Bucephalus and tore the devices out by hand. When another Dominion ambush followed, the rebels retaliated by ramming the abandoned battlecruiser Heracles straight into the White Star. The Dominion flagship survived, crippled, but not destroyed. By the time the fighting ended, the rebel fleet had been reduced to just two ships. The Bucephalus and the Hyperion, both scarred, but still flying. At Raynor's suggestion, the rebels limped to Dead Man's Rock, a lawless haven ruled by the infamous crime lord Mira Hahn. There, among drifting wreckage and pirate strongholds, the Bucephalus and Hyperion hid within a vast field of derelicts, while Raynor, Valyrian, and Kerrigan descended to the surface. They were joined by Dr. Narud, who claimed he could continue Kerrigan's treatment in safety. Mira Hahn, ever the opportunist, agreed to shelter them for a price. She assigned one of her mercenaries, Gary Crane, to oversee their protection. What she didn't know was that Crane planned to betray her. Separated and unaware of the coming danger, the rebels gathered in a safe house while Kerrigan rested, her mind flickering with flashes of her old power. It was those powers that saved them. Kerrigan sensed the ambush moments before it struck. Crane's fleet descended, including a mercenary battlecruiser that opened fire on the hidden rebel ships. Rory Swan immediately ordered the Hyperion to break cover and launch. On the surface, Raynor, Valyrian, Matt Horner, and Narud were caught in the open, leaving a meeting at a local bar. Horner was wounded in the exchange, forcing the group to flee into an abandoned prefab shelter. Horner sent a distress signal to Mira Hahn, while Valyrian ordered the Bucephalus into combat. Above them, the Bucephalus unleashed its elite Viking squadrons, shredding the mercenary attack wings and buying the rebels precious time. Hahn arranged for Kerrigan's evacuation to the Bucephalus, then passed word of a hidden tunnel that would let the others escape undetected. Crane, unaware of this, contacted Cooper, a turncoat within Raynor's raiders, to track them. But before Crane could close in, Mira Hahn's reinforcements arrived. The mercenary lord turned on Crane the instant the rebels were safe, erasing her own mistake in a storm of gunfire. The rebels' next destination was Space Station Prometheus, a secret Mobius Foundation facility hidden deep within the Kierkegaard belt. The Bucephalus and Hyperion crept through the belt's treacherous debris fields, taking on repair crews from Prometheus along the way. While the ships underwent maintenance, Valyrian, Raynor, Kerrigan, Narud, and Egan Stedman traveled ahead to the station itself. But Kerrigan didn't trust Narut, and she was right. The doctor had secretly aligned himself with Emperor Minsk. The repairs were a trap. The crews aboard the rebel ships were saboteurs. As the systems were quietly crippled, Narud entertained Valerian and Raynor in the station's lounge, while Kerrigan underwent preliminary tests under Stedman's supervision. When the sabotage was complete, Narud made his move. Dominion forces dropped out of warp speed, encircling the rebels. Kerrigan fought her way out of the lab, cutting down Marines and a ghost operative before rescuing Stedman. Raynor eluded capture as well, but when he tried to reach them, he was confronted by two hybrids under Narut's control. Then came the Emperor's voice. Minx himself broadcast across the station, offering the raiders safe passage if they surrendered Kerrigan for execution. The sound of his voice ignited a fury within her. Kerrigan unleashed her psionic power, annihilating the hybrids in an explosion of raw force. On the ships above, Horner's crew detected the sabotage just in time to avert total loss. Engineering teams fought the infiltrators, while pilots scrambled fighters to protect the crippled vessels. In the chaos, Cooper, flying a wraith, shot down another wraith from the Dominion squadron. Meanwhile, Valerian, Raynor, Kerrigan, and Stedman regrouped on the station. Narud fled ahead of them, carrying the Zelnaga artifact toward a transport. The raiders launched the dropship Fanfare, newly refitted and armed, with Annabelle Thatcher aboard to handle its weapon systems. Fanfare strafed Narud's transport, but he slipped away. On the station, Kerrigan faced another hybrid in brutal combat. The Fanfare intervened, killing the creature, but the psychic backlash killed Thatcher in the process. As the Dominion flagship White Star moved to intercept, Bucephalus engaged it directly, holding the line. Once the Fanfare's crew was extracted, the rebels executed a desperate escape plan. They irradiated the surrounding dust clouds, disrupting sensors, then performed a series of short, staggered warp jumps through the belt. It was enough to lose the pursuit. Valerian directed the fleet to a secret Umajin Protectorate orbital platform, where the ships could undergo full repairs, and where Kerrigan could finally receive real medical treatment. Soon after, Kerrigan was transferred to Umajin Research Station, EB-103, where scientists studied the remaining traces of Zerg mutagen within her. But the Dominion's reach was long. Led by Nova Terra, Dominion ghost operatives stormed the facility. In the chaos, Raynor was captured. Valerian, Horner, and Kerrigan were forced to flee. Cut off and unable to recover him, Kerrigan vanished into the void. Her next move would ignite the second act of the Second Great War, a return to the Swarm, and a reckoning with all who betrayed her. After the Terran Dominion's victory on Char, the Zerg Swarm had laid scattered and broken. Its queen, Sarah Kerrigan, had been transformed, her humanity restored, though remnants of the Zerg still clung to her flesh like living scars. The dreadlocked tendrils that framed her face were not hair, but reminders of what she had been. Whether her true humanity, her original personality, had fully returned, remained uncertain even to her. After the chaos at the Umagen Research Facility, Kerrigan had fought her way out and fled into the void, to the rendezvous point her and Rayner had agreed upon, unaware that he had been captured, and hoping to find him. Instead, she found only Dominion troops guarding a Draken Pulse cannon. There, she reclaimed the Naktal Brood, turning their fury against the Terrans and annihilating the force that had taken her love. The battle was over. Rayner was still missing. Then came the broadcast. The UNN reported Jem Raynor's death. That's the moment that broke her and hardened her. Her grief turned into vengeance. Arcturus Minx would die for what he had done. Aboard a vast Zerg Leviathan, Kerrigan began to reassemble her power. There, she found Abathur, the Gene Shaper, and Isha, her old adjutant, both still loyal, both waiting to serve their queen once more. Kerrigan's first target was Kaldir, where the rogue brood mother Nefash had gone silent. She arrived to find the brood feral and leaderless. Nefash slain by the Protoss colonists who had settled the world. The Protoss sought to contact Shakaris, hoping to summon the Golden Armada to destroy her. But Kerrigan struck first, tearing down their Psylink spires and arc shuttles before any message could escape. The colonists made one last attempt, fleeing aboard a Daelium Ark, but Kerrigan was not finished. She implanted a larva within the Protoss Lasara, spawning a new broodmother aboard the ship itself. The Zerg tore through the Ark before it could make contact with Shakaris. None survived. Next, Kerrigan turned her gaze toward Char, the world where she had once reigned, now under the control of the Terran Dominion and General Horus Warfield. Before facing the Dominion, she clashed with Zagara, a rebellious broodmother who denied her claim to leadership. Kerrigan defeated her, but spared her life, ordering Abathur to reshape Zagara's form and mind, making her stronger and more loyal. Together, they stormed Warfield's stronghold, the heavily fortified Bone Trench. Wave after wave of Zerg smashed against the Dominion lines until the Terran defenses finally fell. In the aftermath, Kerrigan confronted the wounded general. Warfield, defiant even in death, condemned her for what she had become. His final words gave her pause, and for the first time since her rebirth, mercy stirred in her heart. She allowed the surviving Dominion soldiers to live. Not long after, the Leviathan was boarded by Prelate Zeratul. Kerrigan's fury erupted at the sight of him, the Protoss who had once abandoned her to her fate. But Zeratul came not as an enemy. He brought a vision of prophecy, a glimpse of Zeris, the primordial homeworld of the Zerg. There, he said, her destiny awaited. Only on Zeris could she reclaim her full power and fulfill what the Zelnaga had foreseen. Driven by vengeance and the promise of strength, Kerrigan set a course for the ancient world. On Xeris, she faced the savage pack leaders who ruled the primal Zerg and awakened the colossal creature known as Zervon, the Ancient One. Zervon spoke of the first spawning pool, where the essence of all Zerg life began. There, Kerrigan could be reborn, not as she had been, but as something more. While Abathur and Isha defended her cocoon, Kerrigan entered the pool. When she emerged, she was transformed, a being of immense power, beyond even the Queen of Blades. One primal, Dehaka, came forward in awe and pledged his allegiance. The others gathered their packs in defiance. Kerrigan crushed them all, even Zervon himself, binding the primal swarms to her will. Soon after, Arcturus Minx reached out to her personally. His voice came over the comms, calm and cruel. He told her that Raynor was alive, and that if she moved against the Dominion, he would kill him. Kerrigan could not sense Raynor's life through the void, but she swore to find him. To locate him, she contacted Matt Horner and Valerian Minsk, who believed only Colonel Orlan could break the Dominion's deep encryption network. Orlan, however, was in the custody of Mira Hahn, who refused to release him. Horner led the Hyperion against Hahn's fortress in a ferocious assault. When the dust settled, Orlan was free. Using the decrypted data, he pinpointed Raynor's location aboard the Dominion prison ship, Moroz. Kerrigan led the raid herself. She tore through the guards and freed him. But the reunion was not what she had imagined. Seeing her transformed once again, Raynor turned away, believing she had reinfested herself. Silent and broken, he left the ship. Soon after, a psionic echo reached the swarm, a message from Alexei Stukov. The once-infested Terran returned to life. He spoke of a secret Dominion hybrid breeding program on Skygear platform. Kerrigan vowed to end it. She led her broods in the assault, infesting the Marines guarding the outer defenses and tearing into the heart of the station. There she discovered the truth. Dr. Emil Nerud, the scientist she once trusted, was no man at all. He was an ancient Zelnaga, hiding behind human form. Kerrigan's fury knew no bounds. Nerud unleashed hybrid monstrosities against her, but she destroyed them all, pushing deeper into the Zelnaga ruins that formed the base's foundation. Within, she clashed with the Tau Darim, the fanatical Protoss devoted to the ancient gods, and finally confronted Nerud himself. As Stukov commanded the swarm to deactivate the shrines that powered Nerud's strength, Kerrigan battled him within this null zone, a void where her powers were weakened. She fought through the suppression, wounding him deeply. But Nerud fled deeper into the ruins, shifting his form, first into Jim Raynor, then into Kerrigan's own human likeness. In a final, brutal duel, she slew him. With his dying breath, Nerud spoke the name of his true master, Aemon, the fallen Zelnaga, and the darkness that awaited the galaxy. Zagara recovered her wounded queen from the ruins. Kerrigan's vengeance burned brighter than ever. She swore that once Arcturus Minsk was dead, she would face Aemon herself. At last, Kerrigan's campaign of vengeance led her to Khor Hall, the Dominion capital. She gathered her broods for a final assault on Augustgrad, where Minsk ruled. Valyrian begged her to land outside the city so he could evacuate civilians. Reluctantly, she agreed. The orbital defenses of Khor Hall were formidable. Millions of Zerg died in the descent, burned from the skies. But Kerrigan adapted. She created bio-launchers, organic siege weapons, capable of tearing through planetary shields and orbital cannons alike. One by one, Khor Hall's defenses fell. In desperation, Minsk unleashed his greatest weapon, the Psi Destroyer. A massive device capable of annihilating any Zerg linked to the Hive Mind. The swarm screamed in agony. But Dehaka and his primal Zerg were free from the Hive's control, and they struck the Destroyer's power generators. With their help, Kerrigan destroyed the Psi Destroyer. Now nothing stood between her and Minsk. As she breached the palace walls, Minsk sent his elite guard to hold her back. Above, Raynor and the Hyperion provided covering fire, carving a path through the chaos. Inside, Kerrigan confronted the Emperor himself. Minsk had prepared for this, wielding the Keystone, a relic capable of nullifying her psionic powers. But before he could strike, Raynor burst in and shattered Minsk's control device. Freed from its grasp, Kerrigan unleashed her full might. A psionic pulse rippled through the chamber, vaporizing the man who had betrayed her, haunted her, and hunted her for years. When it was over, Minsk was gone. Kerrigan turned to Jim and offered a final thanks. Then, without another word, she rose into the air, her wings unfolding in a shimmer of living light. She flew away, her broods rallied behind her. No longer for vengeance, but for what came next. For beyond Minsk and the Dominion, far darker power awaited. Aemon had begun to stir. On a lonely asteroid orbiting Ire, Artanis stood beside Caldalus, his oldest and most loyal friend. Tomorrow, they would begin the reclamation of their homeworld, the first great campaign of the unified Protoss Daelam. Artanis looked out toward the shattered surface of Ire, confessed his doubt. Was it right, he wondered, to sacrifice so many for a world that symbolized a civilization long dead? Ire had fallen not to strength of enemies, but to the weakness of the Protoss themselves. Their pride, their disunity, their blind devotion to the Kalah. Caldalus's reply was resolute. They were not fighting for the past, he said, but for the future. For a new, united Protoss civilization that had learned from its old mistakes. Ire was no longer a symbol of what was lost. It would become the foundation of what was to come. Artanis was silent, but in his heart, his doubts erased. Together, they returned to the Golden Armada, and the next day, the reclamation began. the opening days of battle, as narrated by Artanis himself, the Protoss armadas descended on Ire, their golden ships breaking through the clouds, as warriors blinked into battle against the entrenched Zerg. Kaldalas fought to the forefront, proclaiming with the unity of the Kala they could not lose. High Templar merged their minds and bodies into burning Archons, unleashing destruction upon the swarms. But it was all a lie. The reclamation was a trap. Aemon, the fallen Zelnaga, had waited for this moment. Through the Kala, the psychic link that bound all Protoss together, he reached out and seized control of the Daylam. Only Zeradul understood what was happening. He arrived too late to save Artanis, and so, in his final act, he fought his brother to the ground and severed his nerve cords, freeing him from Aemon's grasp, the cost of his own life. As Zeradul fell, Artanis mourned him, vowing to fulfill his dying wish, to unite their people, and end Aemon's corruption once and for all. Among the chaos, Artanis gathered others who had been freed by the Nerezim's blade, including the Phase Smith Kerax, and escaped aboard an ancient ship long thought lost, the Spear of Adun. Within its halls, the Protoss marveled at the technology of their ancestors. Kerax began freeing other warriors still in stasis by cutting their cords. There, Artanis discovered Rohanna, a grand preserver of the old era. She still bore her nerve cords, insisting she could resist Aemon's influence and serve better by keeping them. Artanis reluctantly allowed it. To rebuild his forces, Artanis needed allies. The first came through the Nerezim matriarch, Vorazun, who contacted him in distress. Aemon had opened a portal from Ire to Shacharis, flooding her world with Zerg and hybrid. Honoring Zeradul's wish, Artanis directed the Spear of Adun to Shacharis, aiding in the evacuation of as many Nerezim as possible. But it was not enough. To deny Aemon his prize, Vorazun proposed the unthinkable, overloading the planet's core to destroy both Shacharis and the invading host. Artanis agreed. Once enough of Aemon's forces had entered the planet, the core was detonated. The explosion obliterated Shacharis, erasing both the invaders and the Nerezim's sacred homeworld. The survivors were welcomed aboard the Spear of Adun. Together, Artanis and Vorazun swore vengeance. The matriarch dispatched her elite Templar to hunt down Aemon's hybrid facilities across the sector. Artanis next set course for Kor Hall, where he was met by Jim Raynor. Old friends reunited, but the meeting was bittersweet. When Artanis spoke of Zeratul's death, Raynor bowed his head in silence. Artanis requested the Keystone, believing it might help them imprison Aemon. Raynor agreed, but warned that Kor Hall itself was under siege. The Mobius Corps, once loyal scientists and mercenaries, had fallen under Aemon's influence. Their hybrid-led forces had crippled Skyshield, an orbital defense platform that, if fallen, would crush Augustgrad below. Together, the Protoss and Terran stabilized Sky Shield, saving the capital city. But Aemon's corruption ran deep. Mobius' troops now carried out his will, channeling void energy through the Keystone to stun both Dominion and Mobius soldiers alike. Despite the chaos, the Protoss prevailed. They recovered the Keystone, and Karrax began studying aboard the Spear of Adun. His conclusion was astonishing. The artifact could be used to trap Aemon's essence, sealing him within and banishing him back to the void. Karrax soon discovered that a purifier facility on Glacius was under attack by Tal Darim forces, led by Alarak, who intended to destroy it. The Daylam arrived in time to warp the facility's cache away, catching Alarak's attention. Within the cache, the Protoss discovered a familiar figure, Phoenix. His consciousness preserved in a mechanical shell, confused and disoriented, believing himself still a dragoon. Soon after, the Daylam traveled to Ulnar, seeking answers from the Xel'Naga themselves. There, they encountered Sarah Kerrigan and reluctantly agreed to an alliance against Aemon. Together, they searched for the ancient beings, only to find them all dead. Meanwhile, Alarak boarded the Spear of Adun to warn Vorazun that Artanis was walking into a trap. She dispatched rescue forces just in time. On Ulnar, Aemon had opened portals to the void, attempting to consume both Kerrigan and Artanis. Their combined strength destroyed the rifts, and the two parted as uneasy allies. Back aboard the Spear of Adun, Alarak revealed Aemon's betrayal of the Tal Darim and proposed a bargain. He would challenge High Lord Malash through the ancient ritual of Rakshir. If victorious, he would unite the Tal Darim under his command and cease hostilities with the Daylam for now. Artanis agreed, but warned him to tread carefully. On the world of Slayan, Alarak fought Malash amid the roaring of his death fleet. Protoss warriors slew Malash's guardians to ensure the duel was fair. Even with the hybrid's aid, Malash fell, and Alarak became High Lord, taking control of the entire Tal Darim. At Phoenix's urging, Artanis sought another ally, the Purifiers. Ancient AI warriors slumbering aboard Cybros, orbiting the world of Indian. Rohanna objected, believing the Purifiers untrustworthy, but Artanis pressed forward. Disabling the planetary shields awoke not only the Purifiers, but also the Zerg and Hybrid who sought to infest the facility. The Protoss fought fiercely, reactivating Cybros' defenses and cleansing the world. In gratitude, the Purifiers purged Indian of the Zerg entirely. Their leader, Chlorlarian, was wary but impressed. He agreed to join Artanis' cause, naming Phoenix as their representative among the Daylam. Vorazun's Templar returned soon after, reporting a Mobius hybrid facility in the Revanskar asteroid belt. While Mobius' forces engaged the main fleet, Korax led a smaller strike team into the facility's core. His actions destroyed the hybrid lab and crippled Aemon's operations in the region. For his valor, Artanis promoted Korax to Templar, an honor few Phase Smiths had ever earned. Furious, Aemon sent a vision to Artanis, taunting him and demanding he return to Ire. Rohanna confirmed the truth. Aemon intended to unleash the Golden Armada, now under his control, upon their homeworld. If the Protoss could destroy the psionic matrices powering the fleet, they might delay its arrival. Artanis convened with his war council, Vorazun, Alarak, Phoenix, and Korax. Together, they forged a final plan. Alarak argued to simply annihilate Ire and end it quickly. But the others, especially Phoenix, refused to accept such ruin. Dividing their forces into three strike groups, they struck the Psi matrices across Ire. Each was destroyed in turn, delaying Aemon's fleet. But the Dark God attempted to anchor his consciousness in an incomplete hybrid body, forcing the Protoss to destroy the void shards empowering it. The hybrid body collapsed, but Aemon's essence endured. Then came the storm. The Golden Armada, possessed by Aemon, descended upon Ire. Joined by Zerg and corrupted Protoss led by Executor Celandis. The Daylam held the line long enough for the Keystone to fully charge. In the final battle, Artanis faced Celandis herself. Through their clash, he broke Aemon's hold on her and convinced her to sever her connection to the Kala. One by one, the freed Protoss followed her example, cutting their nerve cords and shattering the psychic prison that Aemon controlled. Deprived of hosts, the Dark God was drawn screaming back into the void. And, at long last, silence fell over Ire.